And on the line I have Tony Lowe, and he's from Friends of the Irish Environment. Good morning to you, Tony.
Good morning, Noel.
Okay, now what's this about the nuclear plant in England? What relevance is it to us?
Well, I think there's a movement in Ireland that still thinks that nuclear energy would be the answer to one of our nuclear, you know, our energy problems, and that it's a good thing. And we fought quite hard to get Ireland consulted about whether this plant should go ahead or not. And we succeeded, but by the time we got the consultation, they were already well under construction. So we went over to have a look and see what's going on, and it's actually quite awe-inspiring. There's 4,000 workers on the site, and the biggest crane in the world. It's the largest construction project in Europe, and it is sucking money out of the energy market, money that we think should be going into developing truly sustainable sources of energy, wind, solar power, tidal, bringing our energy from homes into the grid. All of these initiatives, the price of this particular project has gone up almost 3 billion sterling in 2 years. Gone up 3 billion sterling in 2 years. So then the sums involved are awe-inspiring.
Mm-hmm. And is this all British money, or is it sort of a giant fund that's there for the environment?
It's a Chinese and French consortium, and the way it's worked out, a guaranteed price was given to them if they construct this plant. And the guaranteed price would have given them about 9% return on their investment in a secure, long-term way. So that's fairly attractive return. Now, the cost overruns that have come up have reduced that, but they're still looking at making about, these investors, 7.5% on their income. So there is no problem as far as they go. The problem is the consumer, because the guaranteed price for the electricity was more than 90 a unit, and the actual wind farm is coming in now around 40 a unit. So that we're trapped into, or the English are trapped into, and us if we buy their electricity, trapped into paying twice the amount of money for what is really an unsustainable and quite dangerous project.
Okay, and I hate to bring up and use the word, but does Brexit have any bearing on this at all?
I'm not sure. I think, if anything, it's focused people's minds on interconnectivity. And the fact that you can't actually solve the energy problem all on your own. Mm-hmm.
Now, the reason I asked that, Tony, is the reason I asked that is because ideas of cost are coming into the equation now every time Brexit is talked about, and whatever solutions they come across, in some shape or form, it's going to cost people living in Ireland more. So that's the reason why I asked that question.
Yeah, I think that there is no doubt that the cost of providing energy is going to continue to go up. I can give you a really clear example of what we're facing. We all, you know, I'm speaking on a mobile phone now. We all have our mobile phones. And in order to power them and to power the Internet of Things, we have to have data centers. Now, the current data centers that are planned for Ireland by 2007, that's 8 years away, will mean an increase of the amount of electricity we need by 32%. That is to say, we're going to need a third more electricity in 8 years just to keep our internet activities going. So what we're facing into is not just a question of replacing our existing energy needs with renewable energy. Mm-hmm. We're hurtling into a future where is this energy going to come from, and what cost are we going to pay for getting it?
Okay. And when you talk about us being caught up in the nuclear path to an extent, is this relevant to the extent of us being, supposedly, where you said it looks like we might go into the nuclear energy business in the future sometime? Is that what the idea is, about the proposed plant being extended?
There's a letter in response to what I've been saying in the Irish Times from the Nuclear Energy Association here in Ireland, saying that what they foresee is a kind of suitcase-sized reactors, and they will put them about 10 years down the line. I don't see how that really alters the problems we face in that we're looking for funding for sustainable energy. I can give you an example in terms of solar energy, which everybody knows has dramatically decreased in price. It's about a third of what it was 10 years ago because of global deployment. Now, what can happen when this is done on this global scale is that you have a lot of solar power when you don't actually need it. And the traditional answer has been storing in batteries. But in fact, the way it's going is that this extra power is then used to make artificial gas, hydrogen gas. Now, it's very easy to make, but it takes a lot of energy. But you have these solar panels when they're not being needed. You have the wind blowing when it's not being needed.
Mm-hmm.
So you produce artificial gas, and you put that into the gas pipelines, which we're using for fossil fuels now, and you re-energize the world. This is the kind of vision that we need. We don't need more nuclear power.
Okay. Just out of curiosity, have you any idea, I know it probably hasn't been done, but the consensus either from any of the governments or the public as to how they stand on nuclear coming into the country? Has there ever been a survey done?
I haven't seen, you know, any recent surveys about it, particularly ones where they're coming up with this kind of user-friendly suitcase-size reactors. Up until now, it's been things that have lived in our legends, like Consar Point and the protests against that when they tried to bring a nuclear power station into Ireland. And I would have thought that anything on that scale would be really problematic on cost grounds alone. But the idea of bringing in smaller ones means that nuclear power has not gone away. There's more than 500 of these nuclear plants under construction around the world, operating around the world already, and another 50 under construction. So there's a huge industry out there. When I went to look at the Sellafield Windscale, the other famous English plant, there's actually 10,000 people employed at Windscale, and they're employed in decommissioning nuclear reactors. So you have a huge problem with what's left at the end of it that no one even thinks of. I mean, can you imagine 10,000 people involved in decommissioning these kind of things? So, so it's, you know, I really let the wind blow, let the sun shine.
Okay, and as someone naive to an extent, nuclear energy, as regards other sources of energy that we are using, good or bad for the environment, if you had the choice?
Yeah, we don't have enough choices, that's for sure. I mean, this has come up over the carbon tax. You know, why are we going to tax somebody who hasn't got an alternative? He hasn't got a bus, he hasn't got a Lewis, you know? How are we going to do that? How are we going to change people's behavior if we don't give them an alternative to behave well with? I think ideas of free public transport are where we have to go. We really have to move on this.
Okay, and does that work in other European countries?
It does. Congestion charges work. Why do we have no congestion charges?
Okay.
There's all kinds of ways of addressing these problems. You know, you can actually live in a decent human city, in the center of the human city. Like
I was talking, Tony, though, about free transport. Is there other European countries that have the free transport?
No, that's a really good question that I couldn't answer.
I'll
come back to you on that one.
Okay. I was just wondering when you suggested that we should have it here.
I mean,
it's a great idea, which they should have, all right, because, as you said, you don't have any alternatives. And people getting up every morning now trying to get to work and their school run and all that sort of thing. It's crazy.
Absolutely. You know, it's absolutely brutal the way it's developed. The rule of a motor car, the way we've been trapped into it, is absolutely astonishing when you look at, like, videos of Dublin 50 years ago. You know, there's a car coming up one side of Marion Square, another one going down the other.
Mm-hmm.
And now you stand outside Trinity College, College Green, there at 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and you can hardly breathe. There's this wall of buses going by. The whole thing is just like a nightmare of some kind.
And the Lewis.
Where's our quality? Where's our quality of life?
Yeah.
Why don't we have time to play with our kids anymore?
Yeah. And the Lewis, of course, going across there as well. Okay, so where do we go now on this with the plant? I mean, it looks like it's going to happen. It'd probably happen a year later than was originally devised. So what can we do about it? Or can we do anything about it?
No, there's nothing we can do about it except to try and make realistic goals instead of these, quick answers that nuclear power seems to provide. We need to fundamentally transform the way we get our energy so that we don't have these problems. We don't have the nuclear issue. so that we're actually just using the wind, we're just using the sun. It's awe-inspiring when you see what the Chinese have done with solar energy. Okay, it covers huge areas, but it's transforming their economy. What England has done with offshore wind and the amount of offshore wind power that they have now and new fields being developed, we're standing still. We're not going anywhere. We're slipping behind.
Okay. It's just, I don't know, it just seems to be lack of willpower, if you pardon the pun, to an extent there, on governments. Maybe they're just hanging around. All you can hear talk about now is sorting out of Brexit, of course, but then the next thing online is a election. So everybody's afraid to make moves, I think.
I think they are. I mean, I really think in this whole field we lack leadership, and that's why you have these school strikes coming up, is because they simply don't think that anyone is actually meaning the answers. We've had a big issue with Bruton and the Minister for the Environment over the industrial extraction of peat in the Midlands, and we finally, after 10 years of even going to court, 5 years in the High Court, the board ruled, yes, you need planning permission for the industrial extraction. You must have planning permission. So what did they do? They signed in a statutory instrument removing planning permission. Now, this man is supposed to be the Minister for Climate Change. He knows full well what he's doing. What do his words mean when he turns around and does something like that? It's the actions that the climate strikers and the children want. It's changes that they want, not more promises.
And there's more, they're being more verbal and outspoken and demonstrating much, much more than they ever did before, has been evident in the past 2 weeks, of course. And it's around the world as well.
It was like when we brought our case against the state for the National Mitigation Plan not being satisfactory. And the support that we had for it was incredible. You know, people, we didn't have to ask. Yoga weekends, they'd, you know, have a coffee evening or a herbal tea evening, and we'd get a check-in for €70, or this other group would do this for that, or for the other, and people came in with offers of help. Everybody wants something done out there. It's extraordinary, and it's really rewarding. And if that continues, and I can't see why it won't, they're going to have to change. Our leaders are actually going to have to do some leading.
Okay, and just give us your website, Tony, so people look up all the wonderful work that's been done.
It's friendsoftheirishenvironment.org, and we have a Facebook, so you can keep up to date with what we're up to on our Facebook page. Again, Friends of the Irish Environment.
Okay, Tony, always a pleasure talking to you, and sorry for taking so much of your time, but thank you.
Not at all.
Thank you.
A great pleasure. Bye now.
Bye-bye. And that's Tony Lowe's Friends of the Irish Environment. Something to think about there. And have a look at the website.